Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, presented by Betches Media. This is an exploration of all pop culture, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. We're looking at you, Tom Sandoval. Folks, welcome back to So Bad It's Good, presented by Betches Media. Today we have one of the greatest to do it out there. Somebody that I really look up to. I'm overjoyed every time she's able to be on this show. You know her from her insanely good podcast, Reality Life with Kate Casey, but you might not know she is also now doing live shows. She has a show coming up next week, February 28th, at the Irvine Improv at 8 p.m., which we'll find out all about. You just saw her on The Housewife and the Hustler Part 2 as one of the talking heads. We'll talk Vanderpump Rules, Love is Blind. We'll see where this conversation goes. The fabulous Kate Casey, welcome back.
First of all, I'm laughing because last time I saw you, I was a little inebriated.
Okay. Folks, I mentioned this on, I think, Monday or Tuesday's show. We got to present at the Watch What Crappens Golden Crappy Awards, and Kate was unlike I've ever seen her before. She was on fire. Is this the kind of energy we can expect from the live shows? You were on fire. Take us through how we got to that point of presenting at the Golden Crappies for you that day.
It was like Saturday at like 9. I was folding laundry by 2:30. I was at a frat party at Loyola Marymount, and
is that a normal Saturday for you?
I was like, well, at first I pre-gamed at my niece's house. I'm like the weird aunt that loves to go to all the parties, and they're like, Aunt Katie's here. And I was like, I'm blowing this taco stand and leaving my house. So I left my whole family and I went to pregame at Sydney's house.
Did you tell them you were leaving, or were they like, where's mom?
No. Like, I look forward to parents weekend. Like, I'm a loser. And then I just had like, I pre-gamed, I had 4.5 tequila shots. Then I get to the frat party.
Wait. How do we do so are you like Tom Schwartz where you only do half shots now? Like four? How did you
know? Because we were like, we got to go. Because we were like, we got to go. And I was like, oh. Then I had like more shots. And then I was carrying around, I'm going to post that tonight, carrying around a bottle of like Prosecco from Trader Joe's the whole party. And guess who I run into? Heather Dubrow, because her son is in the frat with my niece's best friend. So I was like, you can't even make this up. Then I went to dinner at the Polo Lounge, and then I went to the Crappies.
Wait, you? I thought you came directly from the party. You went to the Polo Lounge before the awards?
No, I made a pit stop. Oh, yeah. And then I had a margarita there. I forgot about that.
Oh, my God. So you guys, this is very unlike Kate. Like, I bumped, like, so we were in the audience. Kate didn't, like, I got there at 7. She got there later. And so I was, like, going out to go to the bathroom. But then I saw Kate then they were like, oh, no, you got to present now. And as we were walking by, I was like, oh, wow, Kate is fired up. And you
Ryan,
were like.
I went backstage before that. And I had the most nonsensical conversation with Sheena Shea. She's probably like, who is that lunatic? And I was bananas.
And hey, then you ever drink at the Polo Lounge, Sheena? You ever, no, you ever like, do a frat party?
I've got kids. You should come on my show and talk about it. I'm the person to talk to. I mean, I sounded crazy. And then we went out to stage. And then you and I had said, wouldn't it be funny if because one of the nominees was games.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we should bring it up. You brought a bag with the Merce. Like Merce in the, yeah. With the Merce's ashes. And then I said, well, let's play a game. Here's an idea. I've got one. Who do you secretly despise as a housewife? Let me go first. And then I volunteered Vicky Gumbelson and Alexis Bellino.
Alexis Bellino.
Were you not surprised that I did that?
I was very surprised about the whole, because every conversation we have is
it's because I said
great.
Fuck her.
No, no, it's great, but I've never like. Well, Kate, I also want to. You're leaving out the part where you were like, "Who wants to drink with me after the show?"
Oh, I did say that. I forgot that.
You
part.
Were like, and every, and by the way, that was the crowd to do it with because they were all fired up. So you fired them up, and then you went out with like, "I don't like Vicky and Alexis Bellino," and that was amazing as well. But I was.
Embarrassed?
I was in a state. No, oh my God, are you kidding me? Embarrassed. No, I was more just in a state of shock because I had never seen you that lit up before. Like you were, you, it was like a
good
pro
time.
Wrestling.
Oh no,
yeah.
I'm a good
you were
time.
Like, you're like Heather Gay. You're a good time gal at these things.
I am a good time gal. People would not believe that. And I don't know why, but I mean, as I said on stage, I am an Irish girl. And I know how to take it up a notch. So
now
please invite me to things.
Is there a chance, and let me just throw this, I hate to be conspiratorial. Is there a chance you were dead ass sober? You were just trying on a new character.
No.
You're like, I will make them believe that I am completely lit. By the way, but I said to Kate, I said, this is going to be a great moment that people will talk about. And it true to that people have talked about that moment. It's a great moment.
Okay. Well, I hope so.
But,
because
but also, though,
mortifying.
I walk out with her and your family or whoever were there.
My sister and my niece, yeah.
Your sister and your niece. I meet them and they were awesome. But the funny thing was, you're like, you guys leave. You're like, hey, who wants a drink with me after the show? And then you blew
that
popsicle
stand. Well, you know why? I'm the worst with Irish goodbyes because I didn't want to overstay my welcome. I thought if people left and they were like, oh, she's here, they'd be like, why are you still here? That's why.
No, God, they would have. Loved it, but directly after the show, I left as well. Like I was like, I'm not gonna be a Kate Casey. I'm not gonna completely get wasted. Bad things will happen, so I got out of there. But it was really, I mean, that was magical to me. Will we be seeing you do shots on stage at Kate Casey
anytime.
Live?
Anytime, sure, absolutely.
No, but at your live show next Wednesday,
I should. I will. I really should. Now that I think about it, I will.
Well, I mean, I think they're expecting it now at this point.
Okay. Well, it's a done deal.
Wait, what should we expect from a Kate Casey live show, and how do we get tickets before we get into Vanderpump?
The Irvine Improv or the Improv website. It's a little bit of like a background on like why I'm so obsessed with people because, as you know, I watch a prodigious amount of like reality shows, documentaries. I've got like an insane superior recall for details about people, and I say it really begins with my own family, and I kind of go into the backstory, and the net is. My parents were separated by the time I was born. My mom married a con artist, and I have learned over the last few years after being reunited with my estranged father that he is either a con artist or was a spy in Ireland in the 1980s. And it's been this whole process of unraveling that is hilarious and frightening at the same time. I've talked to numerous people. I've done... sent away for government documents. I've interviewed my mother.
Wait, why isn't this a documentary full form instead of just a podcast?
I would like to make it into a documentary, honestly. And you know what what precipitated it was? I was alone one night and my husband was out of town and the kids were all asleep and I was looking for something to watch on Netflix and I come across this documentary and it was called The Miami Sound Murders. And it was like a Miami band, people murdered. I was like, this is right up my alley. And so I'm watching it. I'm like, this sounds way too familiar to me. So there was a paramilitary group who pulled this band over in Ireland in 1975 once they crossed the Northern Ireland border. They're basically the Beatles of Ireland. So they get out of their van. They make them stand on the side of the road and they shot at them and half of them died. And the ones that survived have been on this relentless pursuit to find out who was involved, and they found out that the government was partly involved. It was kind of like set up as a warning to people, like don't come over the Northern Ireland line. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, the Troubles really has to do with political fighting between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. It's Protestants versus Catholics, predominantly in the 70s and the 80s. So anyway, I'm watching this. I'm like, this is so familiar. So I'm alone in my house and I Google the name of the paramilitary group and my dad. And there is a picture of my dad with the leader.
So it just felt familiar when you were watching this Netflix documentary.
I feel like I know this story. I'm like, I know this group. I know it. I feel like I know, I've heard this before. Because my mom would always be like very cagey about like, your father's just an oddball. Like, then I start unpacking this whole story. And now that I've like interviewed her, like when I go through the story, people are like, you got to be kidding me. Like, you know, my mom said when they went on their honeymoon that halfway through the honeymoon, they were in Ireland, by the way, he sent her home. She's like, you have to go home. And he stayed. He spent an enormous amount of time during their marriage traveling to the UK, Yugoslavia, and of course to Ireland. Very secretive about his plans. I end up interviewing my dad about people he met. Some of the friends that he was very tight with and spent a lot of time with are now in the course of history, like very questionable folks. I asked him what he was doing. He kept asking me, are you recording this conversation?
Oh my gosh.
At one point, he said at one point, like, he had married my mother because she was an Irish girl, like Irish descent.
Yeah.
And then later on, I said, well, you disappeared for years and years. Didn't you just kind of like drive past my house to just to like check if I was okay? And he said, well, no, because you guys were Americans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm like, but you're an American. Now, I should also note my father, whose name is William Paul, my mom and everybody who knew him as Paul. And he was an Episcopalian. Now he goes by the name Liam, and he is a Roman Catholic and speaks with an Irish brogue.
Oh, wow.
So why would someone do that? That's like somebody going from like a Trump to like a Bernie Sanders.
Well, this is the real. This is reality life with Kate Casey. This is reality life right here.
I've been fascinated by people, namely my family, for so long, and I feel like I've been sitting on a documentary the whole time.
I mean, truly is a documentary. Wait, when did this take? When did you watch this documentary? How long ago now?
I think it was maybe 3 years ago. Now, okay, here's another crazy thing. I'm at Trader Joe's in Costa Mesa, California. This is like right before Thanksgiving. And I'm one of those people where I my family would tell you, like, don't get me in conversation because you'll never walk away. Like, once you start talking to me, I want to know everything about you. And I get locked into conversations to the detriment of people who need to go somewhere that are with me. So I'm in the line and the guy has an Irish accent. And I should also note that even though I wasn't raised with my father, both of my sides of my family are the ancestry is Irish, but also my closest friend growing up that I spent enormous amount of time with was from Ireland. His family escaped Ireland to escape the troubles. And that's the irony too, is that I spent all my free time at his house. So my cultural references are very Irish already. So anyway, I'm in the aisle and he's ringing me up and he has an Irish accent. And he's like, oh, how's your day going? I said, you know, it's busy. I got a lot of kids. It's always busy. How many kids do you have? 5. Oh, I'm one of 6. And I'm like killing myself the whole time. I'm like, don't get into conversation. Don't. And he said, then I asked, well, where's your hometown? He said, I'm from this town. And he said, have you ever been there? I said, no, but my family's from Ireland. Where are they from? They're from Dublin and County Tyrone. And he said, oh, my family's from right in between there. And I'm like, oh my God, what are the chances? So then I basically said, you know what? I said I was busy. I have this podcast and I've been tracking my dad's story. And I kind of think he may have been involved in the troubles in a bad way.
You're and telling this to a Trader Joe's cashier.
This is while he's ringing me up.
Yeah, perfect.
And then he goes, he's like, wow, that's crazy. He goes, what's the name of your show? And he's like interesting. And then all of a sudden I go, are you familiar with the Miami Sound murders? And he goes, of course I am. What are the chances, right? Yeah. I said, well, and then I said, I was watching this documentary and it was familiar. And I look up and I found a picture of my dad with the leader. And he's like silent for a minute and he kind of pushes my card around. And he said, you know, one of the members lives here. And I went, what? And he said, he sings at my church every third Thursday of the month. And he takes out a piece of paper and he writes, the name Saint Cornelius Roman Catholic Church, Long Beach, third Thursday every month, 3 to 6. Dennis Murray, which is the man's name, and then he writes his name, John McKinney, in the corner, and he passes the paper to me, and he goes, "Call him; he'll talk to you." And it's been like that. It's been like a series of things where I uncover one thing and then it leads to another and then it leads to another. And it's just been crazy. But in the meantime, my dad, who's been estranged to me the whole time, suddenly has this renewed interest in me, especially because he's probably not doing well with his health. But also, like, I'm married with kids and he probably wants some sort of like connection to that. But suddenly he's obsessed with talking to me and wants to tell me things. And that also is like weird to unpack too, because, you know, I basically was abandoned by him. So I think this there's a petty part of me that I've realized this too. He calls me a lot and I don't answer. And I feel like I'm petty because I'm like, this is payback for all the times I cried myself to sleep waiting for you to call. I'm going to let you know what that feels like now. Isn't that terrible?
Well, what's terrible is that I'm listening to this whole story, picturing this documentary. That's what's terrible is that I'm like sitting here going, this would be amazing. And then she's at the Trader Joe's. Like, and by the way, we watch so many documentaries now that I can picture this entirely. That like, it's like Tom Sandoval talking about in the New York Times article about how he thinks of everything as a reality show now.
Which is sad, I know. But with the guy at Trader Joe's too, I said, well, do you know who Andy Tyree is? Because that's the man that my dad was in the picture. And then he goes, oh yeah, he was head of the Butcher Boys. They used to slit the throats of Catholics. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
Hey, Kate, why don't you be safe? Are we safe where you are? I mean, like, listen, like, let's not go too much deeper into this. That's great.
But I got to say.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, my mom, God bless, but is a ding-a-ling. Because at one point she says to me, like, she goes, well, when we were dating, I always thought it was weird that he would have me drop him off a couple blocks from his apartment. And I'm like, he was probably being followed. And she's like, oh, yeah, maybe. Then she said, well, do you remember that? Because I asked her, did you ever think we were in danger? And she said, well, remember that time when you were 4 when the SWAT team showed up? And I was like, what? And she was pregnant with my younger sister. And a SWAT team showed up and were screaming at her with rifles, like demanding to know, or whatever guns, like demanding to know. And she said, I didn't recognize the name and I just had my hands up. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. My name's Suzanne. And she said that they said, oh, sorry, wrong house. And they got in the cars and left. I was like, what?
Wait, what does your husband think of all of this?
Well, he thinks it's crazy because he met my dad. And my dad, when I met with him, this was like, I was pregnant with Jack. So this is like 10 years ago. My sister finds him when we reconnect. And I go to New Jersey. No, first I go to Philly and meet him. And by the way, we pull up to his apartment complex. And our father, who is totally estranged from us, we have not seen in decades, jumps in the back of my sister's car. And he's like, because I'm in the front seat. He's like, hey, what's going on? As if we had just picked him up from soccer practice. Like, oh, hey, what's going on? He introduces me to his girlfriend. She is like, oh, I only thought he had one daughter, meaning my older sister. Now, my mom always told me, well, he didn't really think you were his because you don't look like him, because he's dark hair and darker skin and darker eyes, and you obviously don't. So yeah. I held out hope for my entire childhood that maybe he wasn't my dad. And so when I met with him the first time, I tried to get the straw to get a DNA sample, but he kept the paper on the top of the straw. I was like, are you sure my dad, you're my dad? And he was totally offended. He was like, how could you say that? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I haven't seen you for decades.
By the way, how could you say that after he's behaved how he's behaved? You can say whatever you want. Like, he's just got to take it. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Well, he didn't know my middle name. His girlfriend at the time was like, so what's your middle name? And I went to say Suzanne, which is my mother's name. And he goes, Marie. I went, it's not Marie. It's Suzanne. He goes, well, I don't know. That's what your mother told me. Like, he didn't know anything about me.
Wow.
But what I'm fascinating, because a lot of people that have listened to the story, and if you want to go back to my podcast episodes and listen to the beginning, it's episode 631. A lot of people who kind of listen to the story, they're like, maybe he's on the spectrum. I don't think it is that. I honestly think that when he was a military police officer, And as I explained to this Irish filmmaker that I spoke to, I said, I think he was compromised when he went off to war because he had needed a sense of identity in his father's family. And he goes, Katie wasn't compromised. He was radicalized.
Wow. And
I thought, wow.
Well, this is way better than The Housewife and The Hustler.
Well, I mean, I'm the housewife and my dad's the hustler.
The hustler, yeah. Exactly. Part three. Well, listen, I was going to talk about the trauma of Vanderpump Rules, but we delved into your trauma,
so anyway,
which is a great entrance point.
You get the whole story and more.
Yeah. I mean, amazing. I don't even, like, listen, I was, now it's like, feels
well,
really
now you have
like,
to come.
Well, of course, but it feels innocuous now to ask you about Vanderpump Rules last night when we're dealing
with espionage
potentially and being compromised and radicalized and all of those things.
I kind of feel like I've studied people from the beginning because I was always trying to figure out my family. Like, they're just bizarre people and make sense to me. Like, why am I stuck with this motley crew? And how do they operate? And I became very good at studying people. And my mom's husband that she married after my dad was a con artist who told people that he was a Korean War vet. So I feel like I'm very good at sizing people up and studying their behaviors. Like, I could tell you Monica was a charlatan, like, way in the beginning. And her mom.
From Real Housewives,
I
would have known.
Yeah, I was like, no, I don't believe anything they're saying. So I've studied Tom Sandoval for years and years and years. And one time I interviewed him and I had to go to a karaoke bar. And it's probably, you're going to say the name and I'll remember. The Belmont, is that it?
Yeah, yeah. By the way, I've been to karaoke with Tom Sandoval at the Belmont.
At the Belmont. I'm not surprised.
Sunday nights at the Belmont was one of the big nights at the Belmont for karaoke. And I have video of Tom Sandoval singing like a Journey song or something from way back in the day.
I believe it.
Way back. Yeah.
But he had me meet him at like 12:30 on a Tuesday, which is a little weird. And when I interviewed him, he talked quite a bit about dark matter. So
dark matter, the science topic, right?
The science topic. And I was like, where am I? What's going on? And I was pregnant at the time and I needed to urinate so bad. And I was like, what's happening to my life?
So was it 6 years ago? Is this probably around?
Yes. Yeah. Because Caroline's five. Yeah. So I thought he's lost his marbles. But now reading that New York Times article, I think that he's someone that really believes he's worthy of statues, novels, documentaries. He lives
books.
In like a parallel universe, which is very similar to some of the housewives, to be honest.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's what makes him a good
ego. The ego is there.
It's unreal. So when you read through that article and you go through it, like, number one, he's got a publicist who does crisis PR who's 23 years old, which,
well,
you know,
okay,
I did crisis
okay,
PR.
Okay.
That's
that
crazy.
But that was the assistant to the PR person who then at the end of the article, they made a point of she was no longer there. So this assistant was the 23-year-old, but I don't know why the head PR person was not there with him. Like, how do you pass this off to a 23-year-old that was a fan of the show?
It's unbelievable. It's unreal.
And she seems like a fangirl. Like, the reporter was having a field day. This lady must have felt like she was being given a gift the entire interview.
And that article is so beautifully written. My hat's off to her. Arena Alexander. Beautifully written.
Some of those phrasings were so...
Phraseology was on point.
And when she compares him to Heath Ledger's The Joker in his ill-fitting Zara woman's blazer, I just thought, wow, to put that visual to it, it almost made me sad for Tom, but it also made me sad for the concept. And you just had Alex Baskin on your podcast 2 weeks ago, I believe, but he actually brings up hyper-reality as a concept. Yeah. This hyper-reality that they're living is that it's not just, you know, it's their real lives, but it is being filmed. And then Tom Sandoval throughout the article, what really blew me away was him talking about living experiences three times, once on the show, once when he's doing a talking head, and then once when it hits the audience and we start responding to it.
And just like a housewife.
But that's how he lives his life now. And you're no therapist. I'm no therapist. But what would you suggest at this point?
I am.
Well, okay, then let's pretend you are. What would you suggest for Tom at this point of like maybe trying to live a normal life again and not having
to
live experiences?
He has to go off the grid. He cannot be on television anymore. If he ever wants any hope of having any semblance of normalcy, being tethered to the real world, he has to go off. But the problem is that all of them become so addicted to fame, and they position themselves in such a way that they don't have any backup plan. So like the article says, you start off making minimal money, and then you get to a point where you're making $35,000 an episode, and you've got a mortgage, and you're potentially doing licensing deals, and you want to do this investment. And also you get drunk off the fumes of someone telling you that they love who you are and what you do. It's very hard for people to let go of that. The problem is that, as it says in the article, like, he doesn't know what is his own life and that of the character of Tom Sandoval on a television show. Not that he's playing a character, it's just that those lines have been blurred. There are lots of housewives I feel like I've interviewed who have said, I just interviewed Crystal, where she said, and you have interviewed her too, where she says, like, this show could go away tomorrow and I'll be okay. But I don't know if that's the same you could say for at least 90% of them.
Oh, completely. We see that all the time, because then it becomes a game of trying to get back on the show. And if you're complaining about the show, why are you always trying to get back on it? Or even, you know, Freddie Mellencamp, who we talk about a lot, you know, is that she always said back when she, you know, before she got let go, she's like, if I get let go, you're not going to hear from me again. I'm not going to be affiliated with all this stuff. And then she even kind of makes this her entire personality. So there must be something so alluring to it, even with all the negativity in terms of us commenting, pointing out things, it still must be so much better than living your average humdrum life, according to these people.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, kids on social media. Like, they're addicted to the stimulation of getting a like or a comment. It's the same with a housewife or a reality star in general. It's they get so consumed by that stimulation that the only answer to that for a kid is to completely go off, like, social media altogether. Get rid of your apps.
Yeah.
You're asking a housewife who probably has never felt more emboldened in their life, a reality star who was a 20-year-old who built their entire identity around being on a show, which basically you're being laughed at. You're asking them to completely change gears. And he's like, well, what do I do? Do I go and work at Nordstrom?
Yeah. Well, and the reporter points out in that story, which was, you know, coming from this multimillion dollar, you know, modern farmhouse in Valley Village, driving over the hill in his Mercedes Benz, seeing himself on a billboard for Special Forces, and by all the time he's, you know, singing his woes and how down he is, but all of these things, but also it's a point, you know, something to point out of, even with all these things, we can have this existential crisis of feeling so down, but also reality shows make you dive into your feelings. So he's encouraged sometimes to feel down. And I think that's what's interesting even about last night is, you know, what do you think about Lisa Vanderpump? You know, it does seem like she has so much more empathy for men of Vanderpump Rules. What do you think that comes from? Is that just general internalized? I mean, what is that to you?
I mean, I wish if I knew her better, I could probably get a better answer. But it does certainly seem like, as an outsider, that's true. I feel like she's far harder on women. And I always believe that it kind of, you know, if you go back to someone's origin story, you can kind of understand that more. I don't know if it's the business that she's been in or her life circumstances that she was around men, that she has kind of bought into the patriarchy in a way that's disappointing. I don't know, but she's far less sensitive when it comes to women and their aches. I mean, I felt really bad for Lala and Sheena because I think that they came in with open hearts and they are put in a position because of filming. I don't think that they really like Lisa Vanderpump. I think that they're like begrudgingly going to film those scenes, but they went with an open heart because, you know, they're trying to explore their feelings as part of the process of filming, and they kind of had to get reamed at. And I felt badly for them. Like, they must have been like, this guy's in our friend group. This isn't really affecting you. I know your name's on the show, but the real show at this point is not even about you. So And they're she talks to them like they're teenagers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Lisa.
They're both mothers.
Stop leading
to them like that.
Oh, she was like leading the witness. She was like, come on, Sheena, use your brain. She's like leading the witness of like, this is how you should be. So it's Schwartz and Lisa trying to convince everybody, pulling each person one at a time or two at a time, and trying to convince them to let this person back in. And I think there's a couple, like even Schwartz in a pool scene last night to Lala, I was like, come on, he's family. Like, I guess families are what we make of, like, you know, we can have our, you know, family by blood and the families that we make with friends and such. But I'm sorry, you are on a reality television and you're comrades, but are you family? Like, is Lala with Tom Sandoval?
No. I mean, I don't know. I feel like Lala has a friendship with Sheena. I don't know to the degree of the other women, like a truly deep, meaning like, I'm having a really difficult day and I need 8 minutes to just like talk to somebody. I don't know. I can't imagine that. I feel like the problem kind of lies in that article in the New York Times article where Tom's like, it's really fun and crazy and cool to be part of this show, even though it's at my own expense. And I kind of feel like they all kind of live in that vortex.
Like, yeah.
I'm just going to accept the behaviors and how wild this is and how my life will be ripped apart because, you know, it's this crazy cool experience. I think the real interesting thing will be 4 or 5 years from now when we circle back after the show has ended, because it does seem like it's going to end soon, and ask, okay, now that you've had some distance from this, now that you're looking in the rear view window, do you really feel good about participating in a season that had this storyline and then in kind of the aftermath? It also seems like Tom is very upset about not being able to monetize it the way that the others did.
Well, but at the same time, he has monetized it, just not at the level. But when you have the hot potato, you're not going to. But by the way, next season, somebody else is going to have the hot potato. It's not going to be as intense as Scandoval, but Scandoval was only intense because of who Tom was and what we believed him to be. And by the way, like, he's human, like, mistakes happen. But the funny thing was that article, every time people start to have goodwill for this guy, he's done a previous interview that comes out that makes everybody go, oh, my God. And then what did you think about those scenes? Because, you know, you almost feel for him of like, when am I going to have my friend group back again? I've never been the outsider. And then at the end, when Schwartz is like, listen, dude, you can come with us to Tahoe. It's a great chance to like pull people and talk to them. And he's like, well, Lala and Sheena, fuck. Like, he immediately gets angry. So either you want to be in the friend group or you don't. But you can't then continually be angry at the people that you are sad about that supposedly kicked you out of the group. Does that make sense? Like, I don't understand that vacillation.
Yeah. But he also is upset that Raquel had not contacted him. And he needed closure. So I think he just operates in a world where he's the center of it. And I don't think he's really ever concerned with what anybody else thinks.
Hey, what do you think about how Raquel or Rachel, the artist formerly known as Raquel, how do you think about how she's handled it by going away and actually doing, you know, what we call like the hard work? Who knows what that was? But she went away for months. And then now she's doing a podcast. Hey, she's competing with you and me, Kate. Like, what do you think about that? And is there a part of you that realizes she is definitely now a better communicator than Tom Sandoval, which I never thought I would ever say?
Well, I haven't listened to her podcast, so first I have to say that. I always thought it was in her best interest to wait at least 6 months before she said anything. And I thought that it would be best if she maintained control of her story. And I was surprised that she gave it to another podcast, and that would have included my own, by the way. Would I have loved to have that interview? Sure. But if I were in her orbit, I would have said, you should tell this on your own show or in your own book. So that was surprising. And also the way that it wasn't the launch of her podcast was not synced up with the first episode of the show kind of shows me that she's kind of fumbling a couple passes. I think that in the end, though, she's still consumed by the show. And the fact that the New York Times article said that she wanted a development deal, while some might be like, well, that's smart because you're going to kind of, you know, take control of your story and get it and monetize it. But it's not separate enough from the world that made this whole situation, you know, so much worse for her. So I think if I were her crisis PR person, I would have said, go off the grid for 6 months. Go back to the career that you really wanted and that serves other people. Because unless you have at least 6 months, you don't have much clarity. Even better if you do it a year. But I suspect with the podcast that she still is hoping that she can continue to have a career in entertainment. And look, everyone's, you know, has the right to have whatever career they want. But I just think that, like I said, too many people get so much stimulation from the attention that they get as a byproduct of being a reality star. And I worry that Raquel is still caught up in that.
Yeah, I could see that. But I mean, I have listened to a couple of the episodes, and I will just say, when you hear Tom try to explain things, it always comes out this fumbled mess. And I would say Schwartz to a degree as well, but Schwartz is always friendlier about everything. And he's like, oh, shucks. But Rachel, still not the best communicator, but she's actually kind of, you know, took time to actually recognize patterns of behavior.
That's good.
But I will, that leads into like the Ariana of it all. And Tom said on last night's episode, he said, you know, it's always the person that are closest to you that hurts the most. And I'm like, the ignorance of that statement, he's true. He's correct. But we're all leaving out the fact that like, yes, man, you know, you were the closest to Ariana and you hurt her. And that has set off this domino effect.
But he doesn't care about her. He doesn't care.
Oh, no, not at all. But I'm just saying that kind of ignorance to not realize what you're saying has this weird double meaning. But when I go on Facebook, especially, and I try not to, but when I go on Facebook, you know, I see all these reality show groups, and the amount of hate that Ariana gets from fellow women. Mm-hmm. Can you explain? Do you see that as well? And I sometimes am aghast, and I'm like, a doofy dude that should be like, yeah, Tom. But like, I don't get how women have been like, oh, she's been a cold fish the entire relationship. He had to do. And I'll look at the person and it's a lady with a family. And that always,
well,
what is that thought process?
I think that Alex kind of spoke to that on my show because I asked him.
Alex Baskin, the producer.
I asked him like, which experience did you get more text messages on the day that Erica announced her divorce or Scandoval? And he said, by far, Scandoval, because Erica and the whole Girardi lawsuit is far too complex. Scandoval is huge because it's just simple and everybody can relate to it. So that means that they were cheated on. They felt wronged by a best friend. They felt like they were ignored in a relationship. Every single point that someone makes in this conversation, somebody can relate to it in some way. And I think the heightened emotions around Scandoval makes sense to me. And like you just said, the women, maybe the woman with the family, maybe somehow her life experience, there's like some similar element to that. And also became a mainstream story. So the Girardi lawsuit is still kind of niche, even though there's a Hulu documentary about it. I still think it's kind of a niche story.
It's not as sexy.
And it requires you to like dig through documents.
Financial documents.
Yeah. And listen to an attorney and a judge and a forensic accountant. And it just comes down to like, the Scandoval, like three people, like a couple who may or may not have been in a loveless relationship, who had made some sort of agreement to be together in whatever terms they may be, and this outsider that seemingly like infiltrated her way into their relationship, pretended to be a best friend to the woman, and was sleeping with him while doing so. I think that like that riles people up for all different ways.
And it's a simple premise, but it's a simple premise, but it's like, wow, you know?
Well, I also think then you have the aftermath of it. As all reality shows happen, like as soon as a housewife becomes like a big time star, the second season, there's a come down. So it was inevitable to me that people would get angry at Ariana because maybe you were the jilted ex, or, you know, maybe you felt like you were in a loveless marriage and you wanted to be with someone, whatever that may be, your life experience in romance. She seemingly has far exceeded expectations that she's ever wanted personally and professionally because of the scandal. So people who watch the timeline of events and now they're watching the show that was actually just filmed like what, 3 months after it all happened.
They
feel fatigued by it. It's like, it's too much. And they're like, why is she still complaining when she's been on Broadway? She has all this money. She can get out. Yeah. But they're not living her life with her viewpoint.
I feel like they need to put that on the screen of like flash it every 5 minutes. This took place 3 months after Scandoval. Like it is something that I find, but I'll read these things and then Tom will do an interview that makes himself look like a complete idiot. And then you could tell those people like backpedal a hair, but they're like, but she's still horrible. She's still a horrible person. Like,
well, yeah, this guy's dumb. I think everybody... That's the plight of a smart woman too, because the guy's a doofus and they make excuses like, well, he's just a dumb. But the plight of the bright woman is that, you know, she comes forward, she gives her, you know, her opinion. She says, I have more worth than this. I'm
and
going
she's
to
not crying.
Make-
she's not, yeah. She's not taking every episode in tears.
No, she's like, I refuse to let this rule my life. And I'm going to make some choices that will allow me in a better position. And that's of course what happens, because people would resent someone, a woman who has a point of view and some, you know, some confidence. Of course.
Yeah. A couple more questions before about VPR before we move on. You know, you did mention like, oh, you know, it's, and Alex said in that article of like, listen, we can squeeze another season out of this, which season 11, the one we're watching now, but who knows what will happen after this. Now, me, you know, looking at the ratings still what they are, like, come on, the reality of the situation is they'll be able to squeeze three more horrible seasons out of this. Even if the ratings keep dipping, they're selling at such a high ad rate right now that even if it's horrible
but
for
would
us
they next season, though.
But we've sat through horrible seasons of Vanderpump Rules before. Like, are you?
I don't think it's going to happen.
I think it's 100%. No,
I'm saying
you.
I don't think the ratings are going to happen. I don't.
No. Hey, it doesn't have to. But see, I'm saying like already, it's obviously it's going to go down. But even at the ratings where they're very low on season 8 and 9, it would still be enough for Bravo to keep it on the air to say, I don't care. Make it the Peter show. Like, I don't care. We're going to keep it on as a Vanderpump Rules. Bring in all new people. But the thing is, I keep seeing this sentiment online. Sophie, who's always on my show, she wrote something about, you know, this is not the fun show that we used to watch and love. No. But my thing was, but Kate, when was it ever the fun show? It was always these insanely dramatic events. It just sadder and darker because they're
different.
Older.
It's different. There's fatigue now and too many people have kids. When I feel like when people have stopped me and said, I love this show, it's invariably mostly men actually. And they would say, I feel like I'm living vicariously through them because it was about that period of time where you didn't have as many responsibilities. So it's a little bit of a buzzkill to watch the people that you're supposed to live vicariously through at an older age who have more responsibilities, not just in business, but also children. And I think that people are yearning for something. I think that's why you see Southern Hospitality getting better and better and better.
Kate,
because
like,
it speaks to
you,
that.
And you don't feel bad. You don't feel bad watching them because you're like, oh, they're young. They'll like they're
well,
young. It's all
right
to watch
and
them
I,
be stupid.
I don't know if you remember this, but I did say Lala should do a show about her restaurants. That should be the new show.
Wait, that she eats at? That she
no,
eats
that,
at?
No, when
mean,
she was
restaurant?
First on her, on Southern Charm, I said the what Lala should be doing. Not Lala.
Oh,
excuse me.
You
Leva,
mean Leva.
Hello,
Leva.
Leva sorry,
I was like,
Lala.
Lala doesn't.
I was like still,
Lala.
No, I was still in like Vanderpump mind. I said Leva, her show should be about her restaurants. So then I talked to Leva about it, about what she wanted. She said, Kate, this show about my restaurants would blow Vanderpump Rules out of the water. I said, but that's what people want to watch. Because everybody's getting too old on Vanderpump. And I'm telling you, that's why. So I think they can easily kind of slip off into the distance. I guess the problem is programming-wise, would they have something to fill in? And I don't know if they could quickly do that. So to your point, yes, it may stay on, but I just don't think people are going to care as much.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's caring is actually... But you put another scandal in there. We saw, like, I thought
what
after Scandal... Well, I thought after Scandoval, my adrenal gland, like I was like, there's no way I can feel this hyped about something. But then Salt Lake City got so good that I was like, here we are. It has a catchphrase, timeline, receipt. Like everything was really exciting again. So it really depends on that little piece of magic. If you're there at the right time, right place to catch a good storyline and ride that wave. And that's what I get excited about Bravo, because they've managed to do that a couple of times. And I feel like, wow, that's really great. Even though there's so much excellent TV on all of these streaming services now. The other thing, do you have a friend in your life, Kate, that looks at you the way Billy Lee looks at Tom Sandoval?
Not one person.
Oh my God, Kate. I thought it's like when I look at a Taco Bell menu, it was just all lit up. She's like,
but is she
oh
looking,
my God.
But is she looking at him like I'm in complete adoration of you or I just want so back on this show?
No, I think it's adoration. I really truly do. I know that's an unpopular decision because I think people want to believe that she's just thirsty and wants the fame. I think it's a mixture of the two. Like, I think she wants to be out there, but I think she truly has this hero worship of Tom Sandoval.
Maybe. I don't know why, but okay.
Okay, and then finally, DJ James Kennedy. We talked about his sobriety journey, even though he was pounding insanely strong THC drinks. And then we got new information that Ali actually left him for a night or a weekend, took the cats and left and had this conversation with Lala. And he said, Lala, I'm doing it. I'm doing it for me this time. But it kind of made – it was weird because I was like, well, if she left and then you changed, wouldn't that mean you did it for her and you wanted her back?
I don't know. That sounds kind of murky. But also, I never get the sense that she's totally into him.
Really?
No, I don't.
But see, would you put her in that basket of a Billie Lee potentially of she just really wants the fame of it all, or the notoriety?
That. I just think it's like one of those relationships where, you know, you go out with your friends and you're talking about another couple. And I'm like, I would be like, he's way more into her than him. Or
yeah.
He's way more into her than she's into him. I just
Jimmy and Chelsea from Love is Blind.
Yes,
Chelsea's way more into Jimmy.
I just don't see the energy there. She looks like she's on an assignment. I don't know. I don't like when they were walking in the first episode or maybe the last episode and they're in like the matching tennis outfits walking the streets of Burbank. I just feel like she's like, I got to do this to get my like astrology business off the ground. I don't know. I don't see it. I feel like she would be fun to like go out with. Like,
oh yeah.
I don't know. I'd take her out for a couple of tequila shots and be like, okay, like,
Come to me with the crappy awards, Allie. I'll show you the moves. Have a couple tequila shots with me at the tequila. No, anyway. By the way,
I do want an astrology reading from her. I do want to say that.
Well, let's hope she doesn't listen to this,
Allie.
Okay, so I always think, and I think one of your next phases of your career is shifting more into, being a producer, you know, making these shows yourself. So what Alex calls you, Mr. Baskin, and says, Kate, I need you. I need you. I can't pay you much, but I need your brain. I need spitball with me how we save this show on season 12. Where do we go from here?
Somebody goes, I can't pay you much. I go, well, like next. No.
Okay. Kate, wait. We just got a call. I can pay you much, Kate.
Okay. Good.
How do we save the show? Money's not an object for you, Kate.
The show as it exists now, I don't think it can go on. Is there a question of like, could someone else do a spinoff? I just don't think any of them are strong enough.
Well, the Valley's about to happen with Jax and Doty and those
guys.
I don't
know how interesting. I haven't seen a screener, but I can't imagine that's going to blow my hair back. I think the hard thing is that Vanderpump Rules was so dissimilar to the other shows, which is what it made it great. It was really tapping a male and female audience. It was tapping a younger audience. And I think it may just have been lightning in a bottle, and you could try to recreate it with another restaurant or another business. You got to, maybe it's like, here's a show that I would pitch. I would pitch a show about a podcast network. I would. But it's got to be like a Barstool-ish, like with young people who are creating shows and all the inter office drama, the personal stories of why people are creating their own personal shows, like
the Voomas and the nastiness.
Yes. Yeah. That to me, that's a more modern story too.
I like that. Actually, that actually would be, hey, pitch it.
I would love to run a network. That's actually my dream job.
Well, but Kate, I mean,
I'll take over Bravo.
Well, Kate, the obvious question though, like, I mean, you could right now run a podcasting network if you wanted. Like, I mean, you could
Yeah, I would like to.
Why don't you? Like, you definitely, I mean, you have so many people that like have started podcasts based on listening to you. I mean, you could start going like, hey, I like what you do. I like when you come on, work under my network.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, so sorry, you're like, we'll talk about that. But Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is ending its season tonight. You were just on The Housewife and The Hustler. This is an Erica Jayne potential redemption season, even though after watching Housewife and The Hustler Part 2, I was like, maybe let's pump the brakes on a redemption season. But where are you at with Beverly Hills and what do you expect out of the finale tonight?
I really liked the story, the exploration of what's going on in Kyle's marriage. And I think it's the
Did we get a lot of that though?
I think it is. I actually think at a very simple level, it's pretty straightforward. And I think that's why so many people are tuning in, because it is pretty relatable to couples that have been married a long time.
Yeah.
When you first get married, people, I think, kind of come up with the terms of their marriage. They're like, okay, you're going to do the heavy lifting when it comes to the kids and you're going to build the business. And that's okay at that time. But as the children get older, what you want changes. And I know so many women, especially because I have an older sister, she's 4 years older. And so I've watched it happen with people that she knows too, where your kids start leaving home for college and you're going, you know what? Like, I don't even really respect you because you didn't even help me all along this way. Like, it was very interesting for me to hear Kyle say, I was the one running to the mall, to the dental appointments and the dermatologist appointments and the activities and doing the conferences. And he really wasn't there. And if you think about, she did all of that on top of the fact she had her own businesses. So it was like the terms of their marriage were, you're not going to take care of the kids so you can build the business. And which obviously he did. But it almost negated all of the work that she did on top of raising 4 children. She had clothing stores. She was producing. And of course, she's part of a show, arguably one of the most popular cast members of any franchise, like very well respected in terms of like the Bravo hierarchy. And I wonder if he discounted all of that because he had put her in this role of like, you're the mother, you're the caretaker, to the point where their marriage was consumed by his needs to build his business, or maybe, I don't know if there was adultery. It seems like they're alluding to it, but I think at a very simple level, she has centered her whole life around him and he has not done the same. And you get to a point in your life where you're looking at the other person and saying, I just want someone to be crazy about me. And I don't know if you can do that after 26 years.
And I want you to be able to sing country music. I don't want you to be able to.
I think that Morgan probably notices things about her that he doesn't.
Yeah, but Kate, yeah, because it's new. When it's a new relationship, you are, you know, you are learning those little things and you're fascinated by those little things,
Fascinated,
you know?
Yeah.
Did you get to see the trailer for the first part of the reunion, the Beverly Hills reunion starting next week?
I did. I was kind of surprised that they were all surprised that Kathy was there.
I know. Did you Sutton like goes, ugh, and then all of a sudden it's shaking and they're like, Sutton, are you okay? Sutton, are you like, we're killing poor Sutton when Kathy hits the stage.
She probably have like low blood sugar and she drank some orange juice, but yeah, it was,
well, that's gotta be, by the way, that's gotta be a high pressure situation when like you're a reality star and then you're like going into these things and not knowing what's going to hit you. And well, you also probably, buying Beverly Hills is Mauricio's Netflix show, the second season.
Let me also say that. Thank you for bringing that up. I also wonder how much the reality show factored into their problems. For example, maybe he has kind of always been like, okay, but I'm building a real estate business and you're a reality star. Like, see the difference? And then maybe she was like, okay, and now you're a reality star? Like,
oh, that's interesting.
There are all these dynamics.
A little like you're in my territory now a little bit. Like, why are you wanting this?
Well, not just that, but all the things that come with it. Like, okay, so you used to put me down because I had to make all these arrangements to do press and to do social media. And all of a sudden, that's who you are. So you put me down for it, but now I'm supposed to respect you for it. Do you not respect the fact that I was a reality star before you? That I helped really make a name for myself and a network and be like, you know, very respected in the network. Like, you're on Netflix and you think you're better because I'm on a more niche network. Like, there are so many layers to that
The daughters are main characters in his show and Netflix. And by the way, Netflix, that was a ballsy move and kind of a kind of like, wow, they released a clip out of Buying Beverly Hills season 2 where Mauricio has the daughters around talking about the split. And he's like, maybe I'll go to Aspen for a month. Your mom says I can date, you know, like whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was more of a conversation about it than we've gotten on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, my feeling. And I thought that was really ballsy of Netflix to be like, oh, my, look here, Bravo. We're talking about it. And it's Mauricio and the kids mm-hmm. having a very deep conversation about it.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if I don't know if Alex will tell me.
Well, that's what, like, I was wondering. I wonder what, like, Alex,
are you,
like,
frustrated? Like,
that's what I was wondering.
Like, Mauricio got more out of it. But also,
well, you're monetizing your pain. So who can monetize it better?
Who can monetize it better? But also, he exponentially, this real estate business is going to do even more with a Netflix platform. Is he like a monster? I guess that's what I'm getting to. Is he a monster now where he was like, I'm killing every game. Like, look at me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm really curious where we go.
And plus,
go.
Maybe she felt like frustrated. Like, she's been taking care of these girls and it was really tight with them. And now they work with the father and now they're on a show with him. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious because even in the reunion trailer, you know, Kyle seems to be being hit with questions. And I know it's edited together, but it seems like she is having difficulty because Kyle doesn't really, she's very protective of herself.
She's anxiety. I think that she, like, listen, anybody going through a reality show reunion would probably be shitting their pants. But if you're somebody who has anxiety, that could be a whole other ballgame.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. So also Real Housewives of Miami finale is tonight. I think you've watched that. You said Gertie has a very powerful scene tonight. Is that true?
They should get an Emmy for it. They should get an Emmy for it because she's in preparation for chemo. She has to go into this, into her closet, and she sits there and she cuts off her braids and then her husband shaves the rest of the hair off. And she's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be fine. It's going to be no problem. And then she starts to cut the braids off and she's like overwhelmed by sadness. And then he is just the most loving husband. And the way he just takes over and he's like, it's going to be fine. It's like heart wrenching and it deserves an Emmy.
Okay. You know, it's so funny. I saw that was coming up and it really reminded, maybe it was about a year ago, when my mom was doing the chemo and all that stuff and her hair was falling out. And finally she had this lady come over and one of her friends to, you know, shave all of her hair off. And I was there with her. My dad was somewhere and I was there and I was expecting this very emotional scene, And my mom was just so like whatever about it the whole way through. I was the one that was having to leave the room to like get emotional. And I still have like hair from that day.
Oh, do you?
But I remember, completely. But I remember expecting it to be a thing and it wasn't. And for me, I thought I was going to be the strong one and I was the mess that had to go run and hide, you know?
Yeah. Well, then you even more gratitude for Russell. What a couple.
Yeah.
And to know that they've been together since high school is just, you know, she said to me, I interviewed her and she said at that point, which was like 3 weeks ago or something, she had already had at that point received 350 DMs from people that went ahead and got a mammogram and found out that they had to go back to the doctor. So that's, to date then, as of 3 weeks ago, was like she had saved 350 people.
God, can you see that's sometimes this stuff can do good. It can make us laugh. It can make us think.
I think it does all the time. Even with Kyle, I mean, I'm sure she's getting messages in her DMs that are like, I'm really struggling in my marriage right now and I don't know how to communicate how I'm feeling and I felt seen in that moment. Like, I think that they do receive a lot of DMs. And listen, at a high level, I'm grateful for all these shows because I think it's very unusual for so many of these stories to be told in scripted form. And I think it's enormously helpful for other women in particular to watch these shows and to feel like there's an outlet for their stories, whether it's postpartum or cancer or marital problems, raising children, feeling the weight of a system set up that does everything to work against women. I mean,
yeah,
It's really a very powerful storytelling form. And I may get frustrated with some of the cast members, but at the end, they've chosen to like crack themselves up and we're all watching and judging. And I think it takes an enormous amount of strength to be able to do that, to put your life out there.
Well, but it completely, 100% agree, but also it lives in this bizarro world as well, where you're comparing Gertie and Russell to somebody like Larsa and Marcus, you know, and you're like, in what reality do we compare Larsa and Marcus to Gertie and Russell, who you can tell is a very real relationship? And Larsa, I'm not saying it's not a real relationship with Marcus, but it's a very different type of relationship that not a lot of people can relate to, and it's different. I mean, do you see, I mean, in the finale, do they deal with Larsa and Marcus at all?
A little bit, but you kind of get the sense that she just so badly wants to make it work. And she's sometimes unwilling to really have hard conversations. Like, it's a hard conversation to go, listen, the reality is my ex-husband is still, you know, fighting with your father. They have got a lot of issues to work through, and it is probably very awkward for your father that I'm dating you. I just get the sense she does everything to move the plates around to just maintain her happiness. And I think that is a relatable story.
But only if she communicates that, Kate. But we, the audience, have to read into that.
Yeah. I don't know why she's, I really wish I could really understand her better. And then there's an interesting scene with Lisa and her mother and her aunt. And they kind of show up.
Lisa Hochstein's mother?
Lisa Hochstein's mom.
Wow.
And they talk about how uncomfortable Lisa's mom has felt over the years to come visit, and how they've kind of, Lisa's gone to Canada to visit, but they didn't feel comfortable to come to Florida because Lisa's husband, Lenny, and his mother, according to them, felt like they treated Lisa's family like they were essentially like trash. Like, wouldn't look at them in the eye. You know, Lisa's mom says at the wedding, Lisa's wedding to Lenny, that Lenny's mother said, you must refer to me as Mrs. Hochstein and Professor Hochstein. So, but I think that's very relatable too, is like when you get married to somebody and you have wildly different personalities, and if somebody is from a higher class,
what happens also when you marry somebody that treats you like property.
Yes. But then I also wonder, like, this is what's missing for me. And I hope they explore this more, is like, Lisa says she left home at 16 and then she got in a relationship with someone with whom she lived with. And like, her value was really set around how that man treated her and what he thought of her. And then again at 18, and then she eventually meets Lenny, and she said there alludes to something going on with her dad. Like, what happened that she always feels like she has to have a man? And then I'm also surprised at how long it's taken her to see that she essentially was treated from the beginning like property. Like, she's still living in that space where it's like, wait, but there was like this love story at some point. And maybe that's a coping mechanism, but I think a lot of people probably relate to that in their divorces. Like, was it always this horrible, or was there ever a time it was great?
Well, Sandoval trying to say, I'm saving myself for Raquel. I want to make that work, you know, when I'm in the midst of all of this insanity. But also, like, Lisa immediately going to, I'm blanking on the gentleman's name who is helping her.
Lisa
with Jody. And this Jody is having to hear daily about everything with Lenny. I mean, that's a wild thing to start a relationship when you haven't even financially finished the other one.
But it all seems to work out for her in the end, because Lenny's going to be building this like great house. I worry about her kids. And hear me out.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
A layer of this show that they haven't kind of covered is how, like, the mother-child relationship. And there was a very disturbing scene for me this season when Lisa's kids are eating pizza.
I know. And she said, stop with the pizza.
And she's like, stop with the pizza. This is a cheat day. And maybe it's a byproduct of feeling, wanting to control her life because of the chaos of the divorce. But that was unsettling to me. And I hope that they bring that up at the reunion. I hope that she watched that back and felt like, I'm being way too hard on my kids. but also how we think of ourselves. And I have to say, I have no idea what it's like to be on television like they are. It upsets me how much they change their faces because of the pressure that comes with being on the show. Like, you need to get your face done. You should get veneers to it's like the audience expects them to always be the age that they join the show. And it's totally unfair.
Well, it's like their psyches are frozen at the age when they join the show, and their bodies and faces.
Yeah.
Well, think about if you watch the first season of Beverly Hills or OC, I remember thinking, wow, these ladies are really done up, and it's nothing compared to what it is now. I mean, it's apples
and
oranges.
We're conditioned to see a woman who completely has a facial transformation. It's so upsetting.
Finally, you have an amazing newsletter, a Substack, I believe, that you can sign up for, where Kate will email you all of the shows to watch for the next week. I love this newsletter. I adore it. I think it's perfect. How do we sign up for that newsletter? I'll put it in the show notes as well, folks. But, you know, how do we get signed up for that?
So you just go to katecasey.substack.com, and I send it out on Sunday nights, to be quite honest. And it just tells you I curate a list for you of what to watch, different networks, different genres of what to watch each week, so you don't miss anything. And then when you sign up for it, you can also get access to archive lists, so you can look back like a month ago and there's maybe a reality show or a documentary that you missed. So I'm just trying to relieve the stress that people get when they finally sit down at the end of the day and they're like, what's out there? And I do feel like in the end, the more you watch, despite what people are going to tell you out in the real world, I don't have time to watch, or like, why would you watch all of that? I feel like the more you watch and the more you dig deep into different people's stories, it gives you enormous amounts of conversation. Like, you could go to a dinner party and go, hey, did you watch this?
Oh,
what do you think
God,
of this?
It's the best. I mean, listen, when we talked a couple weeks ago, when I was on your show, you were talking about the We Are the World documentary.
Did you watch
The Greatest Night in Pop? Loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it. You know, was able to recommend it to my audience. And, you know, I've had many conversations with people, not even outside of this show, about that, because it just really hit every kind of quadrant of what I like. And it wasn't a reality show.
I knew
it was a documentary.
Would.
But also, Love is Blind, you know, this week, you guys, we're now up to episode 9. And I think this is the best season of Love is Blind, season 6, that I've seen since the beginning season. Really, really good. And it's like a horror film. We have a Wendy Williams two-part docuseries coming out this week. Where is Wendy Williams? Is that what it's called on Lifetime?
Where is Wendy Williams?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you seen it already?
No.
Mm-mm. I'm scared to watch
it.
I really am
going to
watch
it too.
Did you
feel
watch
like
that?
It's going to be upsetting.
Did you watch that Selena documentary?
I feel like the same reason. I'm so glad you said that.
I had to turn it off halfway through the first episode because I thought, this is bullshit. Like, it is told from the lady who murdered Selena. You know, they have prison interviews with her and her family. It's you know,
so
throwing suspicion on what she did.
The woman, Saldivar, she's
Saldivar,
saying that she didn't shoot the
she's
gun?
She's saying she did, but first off, it was an accident, but also she was covering for, well, first off, it takes forever to even get to the point in this document. And there is no, like,
Yolanda Saldivar, that's her name,
there's no consenting voices in there, like dissenting voices of like, actually, this is what happened. So it casts this suspicion of like, this family has been holding on to the real truth, but it takes forever to even get to the, like, maybe Selena was having an affair that Yolanda was helping cover up, maybe. But at the end of the day, the lady shot Selena. And I just find sometimes frustrating when the streaming networks, they did this with Peacock, with who's the lady that killed her daughter that got off?
Oh, Casey Anthony.
Casey Anthony, don't come at me if you believe she's innocent, you guys. But
I
sometimes find it so ridiculous that I'm like, we're giving this airtime, but we're not even doing it in a proper documentary form where you
giving voice to somebody who was a horrible person. Yeah,
so it was. I wouldn't recommend that. But what else is coming up that you would recommend?
There's been a couple great docs, true crime docs, Lover, Stalker, Killer on Netflix.
Oh, I saw that.
That was good. The Truth About Jim on HBO Max.
I haven't seen that. Okay.
Basically, there's this family and the step-grandfather was a horrible predator, and now they have reason to believe he was a serial killer. There's one that came out on Netflix today called Can I Tell You a Secret? And it's about like a cyber stalker.
Okay, I'm in.
And there's one, The Octopus Murders, that comes out next week on Netflix, which is
I did read about that. I'm excited to see that. The Murder Stalker Killer.
Two good sports docs, too. No. Dynasty, the New England Patriots, was on last week, and that's
still going. I do want to watch that.
That's, you're going to really like that one.
Yeah.
Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, is on Amazon Freevee, or excuse me, Prime. And then there's one about Lionel Messi, which begins this week on Friday. On Apple TV Plus is really good ones, and Apple TV Plus is going to have a good one that you're going to like about Christopher Reeve.
Oh, that one that just went to Sundance, and yeah. Well, it's so funny. Apple TV, we were watching it last night, and they were, the screen was just on, and it was showing all of Apple TV's projects. And
it's wild.
Because I was like, I have not heard about any of these shows, and I consider myself up on things. Yeah. And they'll be like, For All Mankind, The Space, like all of these shows where I'm like, wait, what? What is on? And Apple TV is literally, they have the weirdest plan where they're like, hey, try to come find us. We have great stuff, but we dare you to find us.
Yeah, maybe that's a good branding tool. I don't know.
But they have good stuff. Stalker Killer. What was it? The Murder Stalker Killer?
Lover Stalker Killer.
Really an amazing story. The only thing was interesting was that they made the guy do his own reenactments.
Well, you know what? I interviewed the director, and they said sometimes it's actually, I actually thought of you when they said this, that sometimes it's actually easier to use non-actors because they listen. Yeah, like the actors are like, okay, but like, wouldn't he kind of walk in like this way? Yeah, or he wouldn't be wearing this, would he? Yeah.
But I just thought, how potentially, not humiliating, like but how guy. Funny that guy bugged that, me. That guy. Yeah, but like, it's just so funny. It's like he's having to tell his like horrific story. And then it's like, hey, could you do the reenactment where you pick up the phone and you're getting like stalked? Like, I thought that was like, this is so bizarre. Very Tom Sandoval-ian.
Did you watch Cyber Sleuth, The Idaho Murders on Paramount Plus?
No.
Okay.
But, Brian Kohberger stuff?
Yeah, but basically they interview all, the project was developed when it was like the top of Netflix or not, like TikTok, excuse me, COVID time. They're like, let's explore all these people that are making like a huge name for themselves as TikTok true crime people. Okay. But then when they interview them, it's like somebody with four teeth who's like a meth head. And you're like, I cannot believe they have like 2.4 million followers and they have no background in law enforcement. And they're actually hindering. Now you're learning now that it's actually
hindering an investigation.
The investigation, an open investigation. They're good TikTok's for like closed wild cases, west, man. But not for open investigations.
Well, Kate Casey, you are incredible as always.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thing, though, I want everybody to go to this live show.
Yes.
I think you are going to have an amazing time. She's going to drink with you. She's going to get canned wasted on stage.
They said that they almost sold out of wine that night last time I was there. And I go, well, yeah, that makes sense.
So Reality Life with Kate Casey live show, Irvine Improv, February 28th, 8 p.m. You can get your tickets at the Irvine Improv website, which I'll put on the show notes as well. I'll also put it in my stories. You need to go check this out. We got to support, but Kate's awesome. So it's not really supporting when something's awesome. And go follow her, go subscribe to the podcast. I know there is so many things out there for you guys to listen to. So thanks for listening to both of us or
one of us, or
either. Really, truly thank you. Because Kate is the first podcast I was on of hers was the season premiere of the first season of Welcome to Plathville 6 years ago. I was asked to watch this crazy show called Welcome to Plathville.
And I did.
That was the first time I talked to you all those years ago. So thank you. You're one of the reasons I do what
I do. By the
way,
we've got to book your Saturday series episode.
Oh, anytime.
Yeah, we got to book that.
Okay. Kate Casey, the amazing Kate Casey.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Kate.
Love you.
Was that okay? So Bad It's Good is a Betches Media production. The show is hosted and produced by me, Ryan Bailey, with Meditza Lopez and Sandra Fryer. Additional support provided by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Rebecca Steinberg. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Video promotion by Laura Valencia. Be sure to send us your emails at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey@gmail.com and follow the show at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey on Instagram. And for additional craziness, go to patreon.com/sobaditsgood. Stay bad, baddies.
Betches.